Johnny, this is...
Right, it's up to you.
I don't think I need two mics. But thank you. Choice of seats and a choice of mics. Thank you. I'll introduce the panel in a minute. I just want to check how everyone is doing in this great new space at Boughton. Put your hands up if you think it's great. Oh, that's quite good. Okay. I'm also a trustee on the Greenbelt Board, so if you want to nobble me afterwards with particular points you'd like the Greenbelt Board to hear, then I'm happy to do that. I've discovered two interesting facts. The best-selling item in the milk and honey general stores is... Any guesses? Matches, yes. Somebody, there must be some workers from there in here. And the other thing is, if you're worrying about the rubbish, the big blue bins of rubbish, and thinking, what's happening to the recycling, which I was, it's all being sorted post-festival. So those two things did cheer me up. Anyway, right, I'm taking time away from the panel. Thank you very much for choosing to come to spend an hour with us in Pagoda. The subject is Poor TV, and we are really fortunate this festival to have a very well-informed and opinionated panel with us. So I'm going to welcome them in no particular order. I've got Owen Jones here on the end, who you may well have read in The Guardian. He's a Guardian journalist. And here we have Lily Caprani from the Children's Society, who you may also have come across at the festival. And we have Kieran Smith here as well, who is the creative director at Love Productions. And we hope that between us we will generate light and maybe some heat. So I'm going to start by asking maybe Owen first, just to introduce himself, say a little bit about what he does and his standpoint when it comes to the increasing amount of this kind of television that we see, which starts to explore a demographic in society which perhaps we haven't seen so much of, that has come along to us alongside the age of austerity that we are in. I'm going to ask all the panel for their take on the value of these kind of pieces of television. So, Owen, I'll start with you.
Well, firstly, it's been great at Greenbelt. I've had a great day. It's my first time, so it's quite exciting. I'm off back tonight after this, back to London, but I've had such a good time. And I know from all of you, everyone's having such a fantastic time at this festival, debating and thinking about issues, but also having a good laugh. So, well done on the organisers. It's been a real success. I just want to start by lobbing a statistic out there. On average, people in this country think that 27% of Social Security is lost to fraud. The real figure is 0.7%. And there's a whole battery of other statistics I could throw out there that most people think most of that money goes to unemployed people, only 3% does. Most people think benefits are much higher than they are. Most people think people claim them for much longer than they do. And all of that is a damning indictment of our media, which I'm part, and television, because what they should be doing is challenging prejudices, telling truths however uncomfortable people might find them in order to educate them and to speak truth to power. And on all those counts, the media and our television fail, and they fail in a pretty bad way. Since this financial crisis happened, a crisis caused by those at the top, we have had increased scrutiny, not of the behaviour of the financial elite or tax dodgers or poverty-paying bosses, but an explosion in scrutiny and criticism of the behaviour of those at the bottom of society, whether that be immigrants or whether that be benefit claimants and unemployed people. Now, in 2012, a coalition of disabled charities said that abuse towards disabled people had soared on the streets, people disabled literally being abused as scroungers and all the rest of it. And they said this was down to the rhetoric of politicians and the media. So this has a real impact on people's lives. And we should be clear about that, the impact this rhetoric has. Now, in terms of television, my concern is this, and I think what's often lobbed at people like me is our own... You just want the opposite of demonisation. You want to airbrush out of existence the difficulties and moral complexities of life. You want to turn poor people into saints and airbrush out the complexities of life, and that could not be any further from the truth. For me, it's a question of balance. And the explosion in this television, in my view, lacks a sense of balance, which leaves people with a distorted view of what the welfare state is. Most of the welfare state goes on pensioners, people who've paid in all their lives, quite rightly. Most working age benefits go to people who are in work. Tax credits, for example. 93% of new claimants of housing benefit are people who are in work. But how often do we see this reality on our television screens? Now, I know, obviously, Benefit Street gets a lot of stick. That actually, the problem is it comes in the context of a whole range of different programmes, like On Benefits, On Proud, which was part of a three-part criminal trilogy of Pickpockets and Proud, Shoplifters and Proud, On Benefits and Proud, as though claiming benefits was akin to being a shoplifter. And that programme, it did, what it did is it got this family with lots of kids, a family which has been reused over and over and over again, to kind of push the idea that people on benefits tend to have large families, they're having lots of kids in order to milk the welfare state. And that's intended to make people's blood boil. It's not there to educate or to inform. It's not to show the realities of life at the bottom of society. It's simply there to entertain. And that's why it's called poverty porn. It's there to titillate in a kind of resurrection of the Victorian freak show. So for me, it's a question of these are the people missing in these television programmes. And the others like Skint on Channel 4, People Like Us on BBC Three, The Future of the Welfare State, which was on BBC Two, presented by John Humphreys, which was then attacked by the BBC Trust for failing on impartiality and accuracy grounds for portraying a misleading view of the welfare state. Where are the pensioners who make up most social security spending? Where are the low-paid workers in Sainsbury's and Tesco's who earn so little that their wages are topped up by the state, subsidising these poverty-paying bosses? Where are the young people who I always come across who send in CV after CV after CV and don't even get a response? And as the Joseph Rowntree Foundation said, there were 66 young people chasing every job in retail alone, in supermarkets, people not even hearing anything back. These people are missing. So yeah, by all means, show petty thieves who happen to be benefit claimants, but balance them out in a far more effective way with people who are desperately looking for work that isn't there, people stuck on zero-hour contracts, people who are low-paid workers and pensioners. And then we can show the reality of life. And just finally on that, there is a tradition of that in this country. And in the 60s and 70s, we had far more of those sorts of programmes, and they used to provoke debates in Parliament. I mean, Kes was a kind of classic example, but there were many other at the time. More recently, we have had exceptions like Poor Kids, which gave a platform to children in poverty to speak on their own terms, to have a voice which showed the reality of life. But the problem we've got, and this is where I'll end on, is that the media and TV have increasingly become a closed shop for some of the most privileged people in society because, for example, of the explosion in unpaid internships where only those who can afford to live off the bank of mum and dad can even get access into the media. No wonder, then, we don't get TV programmes called Tax Dodger Street or Banker Street, scrutinising the behaviour of those at the top. All too little, even though it is the powerful, not the powerless, who are most responsible for the mess this country is in. Let's redress the balance. Let's have more people like that and more people at the top show.
Thank you, Owen. There'll be a chance for some questions slightly later on. I'm going to ask Lily to follow up on that.
Yeah, easy. No problem. Oh, hi. I'm Lily. I'm from the Children's Society. Hopefully, a few of you in the audience will be familiar with us. We're a charity that has been around for over 130 years, and we're old friends of Greenbelt, so hopefully lots of you will know who we are. Our history is that we've been campaigning on reducing child poverty in particular for 130 years, and sadly we're still doing it. You might imagine that child poverty is not such a big problem in 2014, but in fact the proportion of children who live in poverty in this country since I was a kid has doubled. So it's actually a growing problem. And our work for children in poverty includes lots and lots of direct services and help around the country where we're meeting people day in, day out who are struggling not just to pay the bills and put food on the table for their children, but they are struggling with the effects of stigma, discrimination, bullying, and they're living in communities that feel kind of under siege because they don't fit a mould that we would like them to. So we see it day in, day out, but we also campaign on these issues. So we are lobbying in and out of Parliament, but we don't just think it's important to lobby for improved legislation or campaigning against cuts to welfare bills, for example. We do that too, but we realise that one of the most important issues affecting these families is the public attitudes that they're affected by. So lots of the work we do is about talking in the media, sitting in news studios, spouting statistics, but as much as possible, going back to what Owen's just said, trying to give a platform to those families, and particularly those young people who really don't have a voice. So as much as possible, we try to do things like, for example, right now we're running a commission called the Children's Commission on Poverty. It's like many other commissions, except it's not about those children, it's run by them. And if you're fortunate enough to meet them, they're on site actually at Greenbelt, our young people who are running that commission. They've been turning the tables on the politicians and running their own select committee in Parliament in the last few weeks and quizzing experts on the issues that really matter to them. And I think as much as possible, what we need, whether it's in the media, whether it's in our everyday lives, whether it's in the campaigns that we run as charities, is to stop talking about people in poverty and give them a platform to speak authentically from their own experience. And we do that in lots of different ways. One of the campaigns that the Children's Society has been involved with is called Who Benefits? I don't know if you've come across it. It's many charities got together, and in the wake of headlines about people like Mick Philpot, who the Daily Mail claimed was a good excuse for cutting welfare because he killed his children. Obviously, those two things are not really related, but it's very easy to run headlines like that. In the wake of that kind of discourse, we felt it was really important, not actually for experts like me to go on the television and talk about it, but start allowing people who do have to survive or live on benefits in order to sometimes top up very low wages or pay very high rents, to actually have a voice and give their story. And I'm kind of here with two hats on today, because I'm here because I work for the Children's Society and because I'm a poverty campaigner. I'm also here in another capacity that might surprise you a bit. Because in the wake of the debate around Benefit Street, Love Productions, Kieran is here from Love Productions, was making another programme called Famous, Rich and Hungry. And I agreed to take part in that programme, knowing it was made by the same company that made Benefit Street, which might surprise you. And it wasn't without criticism that I did that. The reason I decided to do that is because I think the biggest barrier that we face as a charity and all of us who are trying to raise awareness and understanding of issues around poverty is ignorance, a complete lack of understanding about the scale and depth of poverty in the UK right now. We know that 4 in 10 people in this country completely deny that poverty even exists, which is unbelievable, really, when you think of the scale of the problem. 4 in 10 people who just don't see it. And I wonder why that is. I'd like to talk about why that is, that we're so able to ignore the problem. And I'm sure we'll get onto that. But that's why I agreed to take part. The Famous Rich and Hungry was actually made with Comic Relief as part of the sport relief season for the BBC. The premise was that 4 privileged celebrities go and live different lives and spend a few days, only a few days, but, you know, walking in the shoes of people who are living in poverty and using food banks, not necessarily receiving benefits, because many people in food banks are working people who, for one reason or another, low wages, incredibly high debt repayments, illness, have ended up having to use food banks, like the other 500,000 people every year who have to do that. And when we were making that programme, it was a journey of education for some very privileged people who really had absolutely no idea how these people were living. And the change that I saw in their attitudes over just a few days was remarkable. And my hope was that that same journey would be taken by the audience, which is why I agreed to take part. Rightly or wrongly, and I'm very happy to debate whether that was the right thing to do or not, I personally feel that the people who watched that programme learnt something that they needed to hear, and they heard it directly from people whose real lives were being... They were opening their real lives up to the audience, which I think was brave and hopefully enlightening for a lot of people. So I'll talk about both things, the Children's Society, anti-stigma campaigning, and campaigning with children and young people, but also about taking part in these programmes and the rights and wrongs of that, and whether it's always the wrong thing to do, which I don't think it always is.
Thanks, Lou. Kieran.
I realise I'm here slightly as the pantomime villain, as the maker of Benefit Street, but I'll give you a little bit of background as to Love Productions and the company. It was set up 10 years ago, and the feeling behind it was that we wanted to take serious subjects and things that were important to society and try and make them entertaining and try and bring an audience to those kind of subjects. So the first series that we made that kind of caught people's attention was on BBC Three. It was a series called The Baby Borrowers. Now, The Baby Borrowers sprang from the statistic and the fact that in the UK at the time, we had the highest rates of teenage pregnancy. So what we decided to do was to take five teenage couples and fast-track them through parenting, right? So they looked after other people's babies. They looked after other people's toddlers. And at the time, everybody said, well, you can't do that. You know, you can't give someone else's baby. And we worked out a way of doing it that was safe and that was where we had chaperones, we had nursery staff with us. So one of the things that Love Productions tries to do is to bring an audience to serious subjects. Some of you might have seen a series we made for Channel 4 called My Last Summer, that went out a few months ago, which was about end-of-life care. We took five people with terminal illness, and we filmed them for the last year of their life, and we brought them together for residential meetings, and three of the five died whilst we were filming. Now, that's been lauded as a really sensitive and well-handled documentary series on a very serious subject. And the same team that made that program, that series, also made Famous Rich and Hungry with Lily, and we've done Famous Rich and Homeless as well, and Famous Rich and In the Slums, which were where we were partnered with Comic Relief. The same team made Benefit Street. We also turn our hand to cake sometimes because we're the makers of the Great British Bake Off also, which is a bit of a change of tack sometimes. Now, with Benefit Street, when we came up with you know, the idea for it, what we wanted to do was to... We realised that in 2013 there were thousands of people who were benefit claimants and relied on benefit, whether they worked or didn't work, for the majority of their income. And we knew that there were huge changes that were going to come in, and that people who were basically on the bottom rung of the economic ladder were going to face the hardest times, you know, out of anyone else in society. And what we wanted to do was to you know, you can have a studio debate about those subjects, but what we wanted to do was tell the story through a community. Now, I actually agree with Owen on quite a lot of what he said, in that there is a glut of these programs. There are a lot of them out there. So there are things like, you know, people like us and Skint and on Channel 5 as well. I like to think that actually we got it better on Benefit Street. We spent 18 months filming that community, and what was very important to us is yes, not just to show people who you know were on benefit for, you know, for all of their income, but also to show people who were working, also to show people who were claiming because they had to give up work because of illness. Also to show, you know, there was a huge furore after the first episode. You know, just to be completely frank and completely honest, we didn't expect the audience that we got. We didn't expect the level of press attention that came. You know, at that time, we were sort of thinking maybe a million people will come to it, because at 9 o'clock on Channel 4, there weren't huge audiences coming. When we got 5 million, you suddenly realise that, you know, something has happened. Something has happened here. So you know, we were very keen to try and show, you know, just through the prism of one street, a broad breadth of experience. And you know, what I felt was that we got a lot of criticism after episode one. And actually, if people stuck with the series, actually, they realised that we deal very sensitively with the people we film. We have a huge duty of care to those people who are actually brave enough to take part in a television programme. We stick with them through filming. We stick with them through through broadcast, and we continue that relationship. And you'll hear a lot in the press and the papers about how that community has been ripped apart as a result of Benefit Street, and it's genuinely not the case. I'm very happy to talk, you know, if people have questions about what's happened and the perception of the series. But we felt, with Benefit Street, that it was an incredibly timely moment to make that series. And we looked at people like us, and we looked at Skin, and we said we sure as hell want to make a better series than that. And in my opinion, I felt we did.
Thank you. Thanks to three of you. I just want to ask you, Lily, if I can start with you. When there's a show that goes out like Benefit Street that reaches an audience above expectation, what's the reaction? What's the outcome? How do you as a charity feel that? Do you benefit from Benefit Street?
The reaction to Benefit Street was really interesting, I think, and maybe not quite as one-sided as it might appear. Now, as I mentioned before, the Children's Society, lots of other charities were part of this coalition of charities called Who, on a campaign called Who Benefits, which was designed to counter some of the negative stereotypes around those who need to claim benefits. And we did criticise the programme. We didn't criticise the programme, importantly, because it showed people on benefits and their real lives. And we didn't criticise the programme because some of the commentary was people like this shouldn't be exploited on the television. And I don't think we're able to say whether they're exploited or not, and that's something you need to ask Kieran. I think the reason we criticised it is because it was framed as being about benefits. And can I just ask the audience, put your hand up if you actually watched Benefit Street. Keep your hand up if you were shocked by what you saw on it. Not that many people. A lot of people who were commentating around the programme acted like they had no idea such things happened, no idea that people lived these lives. And I find that really shocking. I don't know about you. I grew up on a street with lots of people like that next door to me, and I don't think they're demons, and I didn't think they were demons when I saw it on the TV screen either. What I found really upsetting and unfortunate was because it was called Benefit Street, we thought that's what it was all about. What it actually showed was people in a really difficult community where there were hardly any jobs around, who'd had been let down in education, maybe had mental health problems, probably being let down by a lack of access to decent healthcare, numerous, multiple challenges, managing, pulling together, sometimes struggling, but often doing quite well in a really adverse set of circumstances. And actually, if it hadn't been called Benefit Street, it might have been quite a different programme. And actually, I think Kieran's right in saying some of the content in there was really incredibly powerful and moving and interesting and thoughtful. Unfortunately, it came along in the context of this really vicious, toxic environment where as soon as you put the word benefits near anything, it's contaminated, you know. So for us, it was an opportunity to get into what we hope will be a slightly more nuanced debate that actually talks about the reality of people's lives and not this lazy, shorthand kind of scrounger narrative that's already out there in the papers. And we took part in that debate, but it is a really difficult debate to have a kind of mature, grown-up conversation about. But actually, when you look at, for example, the reaction on social media, there was some hideous stuff said, awful, awful things said. But there's actually been some interesting analysis of all of the discussion that happened on Twitter and Facebook and places like that afterwards. And do you know that actually there was more people saying, this is awful, you shouldn't be having a programme like this, than there were who were saying, these people are awful. So it's not quite as straightforward as we think. I think one thing we can say for sure, it's incredibly divisive. It polarises people. The sad thing really is that for some people, it's alien to them and something they're disgusted by, and for others, heartbreaking, and makes them feel utterly exasperated because they realise it's so far from the reality that they know. And the interesting thing for me is that the reason it gets, I think the reason we get 5 million people watching programmes like this is because it seems so alien. Somehow we are so feel so removed from this reality. I think it's something to do with the fact that we're becoming so incredibly unequal as a society now. The further and further we get away from each other, the very, very rich and privileged, and those who are really, really struggling, the more and more we just don't understand each other at all. And it becomes just a spectacle and something that doesn't feel familiar and easy to understand. And I think that explains this kind of fetishization of class difference that we've got, whether it's Made in Chelsea laughing at silly rich people or whether it's kind of wringing our hands at Benefit Street.
Thank you. Owen, I just want to ask you, I know you said that we weren't making programmes about every sphere of society, we're just making programmes about one particular... We've got a glut of programmes about one particular issue at the moment. Do you think we shouldn't make those programmes?
No, that's the point I'm making. I said the issue is that lack of balance, and you put it so well, the title had so much to do with the problem, because as soon as you call it... I mean, just to explain the reason we have all these programmes, what's happened is this. Since the financial crisis... The narrative was, we're in this mess because the last government overspent, even though the Conservatives back spending pound for pound. I'm not going to get into that party political debate, but the point was it was framed partly as that's because we spent all this money on the welfare state, and we spent all this money on the welfare state, which went to the wrong people. That was then followed by an explosion of media coverage focusing on people like the Sun's campaign, Shopper Scrounger, and all the rest of it. And that was then, in this atmosphere, TV producers realised there was a market to be made. It's not like politicians and TV producers and media moguls sat in a room together smoking cigars and devising creative ways to grind the faces of the poor into the dirt, if you like. The issue was that you get this atmosphere which develops. And in that atmosphere, and I came up with the consequences partly of, for example, disabled people... facing abuse. So that's to explain the basis for why you suddenly got these increase in programmes. Now, calling it Benefit Street is obviously very provocative because the impression you're left with is that because those people portrayed on TV absolutely have, of course, and that's the point I made, have a place on television, and we shouldn't shy away from the complexities of lies. I grew up with people not dissimilar to some of the people portrayed in that programme, some of them who have very difficult lives indeed. I mean, two of the people, you know, I went to primary school with, two of the boys in my class ended up in prison, and they it was almost, looking back, kind of almost seems almost inevitable in a way that was going to happen. And yet, the point is, calling a programme Benefit Street, which makes it sound like it's a slice of this is what the welfare state is, where the first episode follows a petty thief and a shoplifter, it fuels that whole narrative which we have at the moment, which, as I say, disproportionately focuses on a very particular segment of society, excluding everybody else. And it comes in the context of, as I say, all these other programmes. I actually felt a bit sorry for Benefit Street, because Channel 5's programme on Benefits and Proud, following Shoplifters and Proud and Pickpockets and Proud, was far more offensive. It was obviously on Channel 5, and therefore probably very few people watched it. But at the same time, I think it was unlucky, because there'd been so many of those programmes, it just reached a tipping point where people went, hang on a minute, why is there so many of these programmes framed in this way, focusing on this section of society, if you like, and framed in a way that's seen as titillating and sensationalist, focusing on larger-than-life characters because they seem to be more entertaining. And that's why it comes back to, as I say, showing a much broader spectrum of people, and that includes the fact that most people in poverty in this country are in work. These are people who earn their poverty. They get up every day and earn that poverty. That there's actually a cycle of people who remain on benefits all the time, whether they're in work or not, but they're stuck in a cycle of precarious work, unemployment, back into precarious work, back into unemployment, and then the people stuck, obviously, applying for jobs who don't get them. These are complexities, and I suppose the counter-argument is, oh, it's not interesting enough. I disagree with that. I think that is interesting, and I think it would also leave viewers far more educated than these programmes at the moment are achieving. And as I said, to address the balance as well, I'd like more scrutiny of those at the top of society. I don't just mean kind of jokey shows like Made in Chelsea. I don't think those programmes, you know, I don't think the poor, oppressed, privileged section of society are really having it that tough at the moment, I'll be brutally honest. But I think the problem is with programmes like tax avoidance, about the behaviour of the bankers, the difference is this is another counter-argument. You know, people at the bottom of society, if they come off badly, their kids will get bullied at school, they'll be shouted out on the streets, you'll never hear from them again. Go after people at the top, they have lawyers, and they will come after you pretty sharpish if they don't like the way they're portrayed. And that is difficult to deal with, but we still need, as a society, to redress the balance with the obsessive scrutiny of people at the bottom, framed in a way, focusing on a particular section, balance that out and have more of those at the top and hold them to account so our views are less biased and less distorted.
So, Kieran, do you accept that it's a failure on your part? So where is the programme, I got the internship because my daddy's the CEO, or, you know, I'm doing 30 hours in Sainsbury's and I'm still on benefits? Are those ideas pitched to you, and are there reasons why you don't make those programmes?
As Love Productions, we generate our own ideas.
Sorry.
So we don't. No one pitches to me necessarily. I mean, we think about what are the important subjects that are going on. And yes, I suppose we could spend more time thinking about fat cats and people who are.
And why don't you?
I suppose because it's just not a. It's not. You know, it feels that, you know, News covers that, Dispatch is covers that. There are other series that sort of cover those subjects. Partly as well, just because I'm more interested in the program. It's not that we deliberately think, "Oh, what are we gonna make a program about now?" I just don't. Not particularly interested in filming wealthy fat cats. The other issue as well is slightly that they're very difficult to actually get on television. I mean, that's the truth. That's the truth of the matter.
A bit
as well.
More media savvy, you mean? they're less likely to put themselves in a position where they'll end up being humiliated on television. Well, that's what you're saying, I think.
No, I don't think it's about. I mean, I don't think. I mean, one of the things that's useful to talk about, because I think there is an impression that we go in there, we make a series, and then we disappear back to London and edit it, and no one has any say. So, one of the things that we've always done as a company is, when we film people, we explain the series, you know, exactly what it's about. We also show people the cuts of the programme before they go out. So everyone who featured on Benefit Street saw the programme before it went out, and they were given the opportunity to say, is that a fair and accurate representation of what happened, of what we filmed, and of your life? And if anyone felt that actually, you know what, we got something wrong, or it wasn't fair, we changed it. Now, what we also do, which is very unusual in television documentary practice, is if people felt at the time when we were filming, they felt open enough to talk about a subject or talk about something, and then they watched the cut that we had made and decided, actually, you know what, that's going to have an impact in my life, you know, I haven't told my mother about that, or whatever the subject might be, we would take it out. So everybody who was in Benefit Street saw the programmes before they aired, and in cases with White D's father was in the programme, okay, and he was in a finished cut of a programme, and this was around about programme 3, because of the attention the series was getting, she didn't really want her dad to have that, so we took it out. There were arguments between people as well that had subjects, you know, and you know, we showed them to them, and people felt, you know, oh, I don't want that in now, and we took them out. And at that point, people were very happy with the series. Now, what happened is that when things like social media and the reaction to the series comes in, and you get idiots on Twitter and whatever it might be saying all sorts of, you know, hideous things about people, then people start to kind of, you know, backtrack on what they felt about the series. And that's what happened on Benefit Street to a degree.
Well, I mean, again, I should just make it clear. I don't think, I'm not going to treat you like a pantomime villain or anything like that. And what I'm interested in is the kind of the system, if you like. The, because what you've said is, and it's not you, it's a broader issue. When you're asked why you weren't interested in those at the top, you just made it clear you're just not interested. Mm. And this is the problem, because we have a media and TV elite who are fascinated by putting particular groups of people at the bottom of society. I hate using that expression, but and putting their behaviour under the spotlight, and yet have absolutely no interest whatsoever in the behaviour of those at the top, even though these are the powerful people who dominate our society, who have so much to do with so many of the problems that affect us on a daily basis, whether it be the financial crisis, tax avoidance whilst we're having these huge austerity cuts, whether it be... I'm not surprised you're not doing internships, because TV, the whole TV industry is built partly on unpaid internships, which cut out people from particular backgrounds. But these are issues which dominate our society and have everything to do with the lives we live in, the society we live in. And yet you have no interest in it whatsoever, almost, by the sounds of it.
It's not that I don't have it.
No,
yeah.
Well.
I do think there is, but it is a very real problem trying to. Yes, you could do an investigation. Okay, we don't tend to do current affairs programs. That's not our area of expertise. So you could do an investigation, but actually trying to convince some of those people that you're talking about to come onto a program and to open up their lives and to be part of a program is incredibly difficult. And the vast majority of them will.
But you
say
said
no.
You weren't interested. I mean, that's another reason you're now giving. But you actually said, I'm just not interested in filming fat cats with a camera. And it's not just you again. It's no. The media as a whole. That is their position, and that's why we don't scrutinise them. That's why they get off the hook all the time.
Just one thing to point out here, though. There's a glut of these programmes, so somebody's watching them. So there's a responsibility. I mean, many of us put our hands up to say we did watch Benefit Street. There's a reason why programmes keep being commissioned, because they do well in the ratings. So I'm just going to ask Lily here, what's the best outcome for programmes like that from this glut? What would you like the audience to feel? And then I want to talk a little bit about whether you help the audience feel ready to take action, I suppose. I'll ask Lily first.
There are a glut of programmes, but I don't think it's really right to sort of put them all in the same box, really. It's not particularly surprising in a time of austerity and changes to welfare and rises in unemployment and all of those things that there's a growing interest in telling that story, and it's right that we do, I think. And it would be wrong if we completely ignored that. And I agree with Owen, it's unbalanced. We also need to hear about what's happening at the top of society and how they're getting away with what they are. But I don't think that means, by extension, we shouldn't hear the real stories of people affected by austerity, by welfare reform, by unemployment, by mental health problems, etc. And they're not all the same. I think that you can talk about the quality of the programme making. I go back to what I said before. I think as much as possible they should be giving a platform to people who don't have a voice because they aren't part of the establishment. They don't write for newspapers. And I think it was already mentioned, a really good example is Poor Kids. I don't know if anyone's seen that documentary. It was a few years ago now, and made by True Vision. It was almost entirely children's voices, and it was about their own experience. And of course there's editing, and everything has to be mediated through TV production and the broadcaster to some extent. But as much as possible, it was an authentic voice that came through that, and I think that that's exactly the kind of programme making exactly. We need, because it's authentic and it tells us the truth, and it doesn't always tell us what we want to hear, and it's uncomfortable, and sometimes it's shocking, and sometimes it's really upsetting, and sometimes it's really triumphant, but it's authentic and it's true. The right reaction is to just have better understanding. The only thing that we really want from that kind of television is that people see reality, see the truth, and see an unvarnished truth. And it's quite difficult to describe the reaction, because what we're talking about is people's beliefs and attitudes and feelings, and perhaps that influences their behaviours later on. But at the very least, it should reduce the ignorance that there is, I suppose. I go back to that 4 in 10 who think there's no such thing as poverty in this country. And if they were perhaps better informed, we might have quite different experiences for those people who live in poverty, because they're less likely to experience stigma, discrimination, bullying, abuse in the streets, abuse when they are actually on television, abuse when they go to the job centre or wherever it is where they are constantly demonised. I really don't want us to think that... In fact, it makes me quite angry when I hear people say that we shouldn't have poor people on television. It's incredibly patronising and paternal. Why on earth shouldn't they be on television if they want to be? They have every right to be. But it's just about the way that's framed, how responsibly that's framed and broadcast. And also we have to take responsibility as an audience for our reaction to it. It's not okay to demonise and to go on Twitter and call people disgusting names. I also think it's not okay to patronise people and say, poor them, they really not ought to, they ought not be exploited, let's not watch this, and that kind of squeamish response we also get. That's not okay either. So there's a bit of responsibility on us as audiences. We can't keep blaming the TV makers. We do keep watching this stuff. 5 million people watch Benefit Street. So it's about challenging ourselves about the way we respond to it too, I think.
I'm going to ask you for your questions for a minute. I've just got one more question for Kieran before we do that. When you're in the editing suite, what's driving you? Is it telling the story, or are you wanting to prompt people to take action, to feel that they should do something about what you put in front of them?
Well, it's a bit of both, really. I mean, story is incredibly important, and you know, for a television programme, you've got to have. There's got to be some element of drama. There's got to be something that people will want to watch. People have got to engage with the people that we have filmed. So that's a big part of it, and it's got to have a coherence. It's got to make sense. I mean, Benefit Street. Each episode was roughly themed. So programme one was about the things that people do when they don't have very much and the choices they make. Two was about focus on immigration. Three was about parenting and bringing up children on that street. Programme four was about people who had aspiration to kind of leave James Turner Street. So one of the things that I kind of return to again and again is with Benefit Street, the second episode where we managed to film a Roma family who were living in a house on the streets, and they were trying to make a scrap metal business, and they didn't really have any permits, and they weren't really able to make any money, and they got evicted. And then a few weeks later, 14 guys from Romania were moved in, and they thought they were coming to Birmingham to work as part of a chain gang in the fields around in the West Midlands, going to get £100 a day. They were getting £1 a day, and the person who was in charge of that had all their passports. There were 14 men living in a two up, two down. So when I think about Benefit Street and I think about other series we made, I think that we highlighted an issue, you know, particularly around immigrants in programme two, but I think also around poverty. I think we brought it to the attention of a lot of people who weren't aware that people were living like that. Now, sure, there are some people living on James Turner Street who we liked as programme makers because they were big characters. You know, Dee Kelly, White Dee, as she calls herself. You know, it was a you know, was somebody that we met, and we kind of felt, well, she's very engaging, she's very warm, she's got an amazing turn of phrase, she lights up the screen, if you like. But we also chose her because she was a single mother living off benefits. She had worked, she had depression, she was claiming ESA. So there were lots of reasons why the people who are in that program are in that program. But one of the things we've always strived to do, whether it's Benefit Street and then some of the more campaign-y programs that we've done, like with Lily, Famous Rich and Hungry, Famous Rich and Homeless. We also did a one-off for Channel 4 called The Cruel Cut, which was about FGM in this country, was actually to make people sat at home watching think about our society, think about the things that are going wrong, think about injustice. And yes, I can't compel anyone to do anything about it off the back of watching our programs, but that's at the root. And we also want to make serious subjects entertaining so more people come to them as well.
Thank you. Thanks, all three of you. Is there a mic for questions, Richard? Do people in the audience have questions? There's a question here at the front, lady in the black bobbly hat. It hasn't got a bobble. Sorry, lady with a nice black hat.
Thank you.
If you could direct your question at somebody particularly on the panel, that would be useful.
Kieran, I am from the community that you made the programme, not fairly close to it. I'm from Birmingham. I was raised there from a working class community. Just from my community and what I heard, we found the programme offensive. I personally found it very disturbing that you could film children. And you said you got permission from the parents, and obviously they were portraying their children, you know, in a particular situation. But I felt that you focused on a group of people that you use the word entertainment. I work in media too, so I understand you're making a program. But I felt like the important word that it lacked was dignity. I think if you take a documentary like Educating Yorkshire, you see that they're trying to elevate people from the lower, if you like, sections of society. And that's what troubled me about the programme. And I'm sorry to have to voice that, because I know that's probably not very pleasant to hear, but what I wanted to hear was, what aftercare did you have for those children that I know firsthand people drove up and down that road hurling abuse at those families? So I was very concerned about what aftercare you did have for those children, particularly those children who I know some of them didn't go to school because they were afraid of getting bullied.
So one of the things that the amount of attention that the series got was a surprise to us. Okay, so that's the starting point. So
To the next question.
When people started, and you're right, the press started turning up on James Turner Street, and it also became a bit of an attraction spot, and members of the public would come along and have their photograph taken. Now, one of the things that we do, you know, so that took us by surprise. We weren't expecting that, and so we were reacting to that as well. What we did is we stayed on the street. So all the time through broadcasts, we were there. We were in Dee's house when reporters were knocking on her door, when members of the public were asking to have photographs taken with her. We were with Mark and Becky as well. Now, Mark and Becky's eldest child is one of the children that said that he had an issue with not going to school anyway. There was one day he didn't go to school, which they claimed was to do with the attention on the street. He's now back in school, and there is no issue. We didn't have any other complaints. And one thing that I would draw your attention to is that when people complain about a television program, Ofcom, who is the people who interrogate me and investigate our company if something's wrong, they investigated us. They looked at our child protection policy. They looked at the way that we had filmed children. Because Steve Chalk, who took over the school at the end of the road, he was given plenty of time to gather support, to gather evidence, and to gather complaints about us if they were there. And you know what? The people who took part in the program, whose children were in that program, who we showed the programs to beforehand, in some instances we changed the program in and around scenes with the children, felt that we had dealt with them incredibly respectfully. Now, there are some things, when the program is broadcast, there's some things that we can't control, and the press attention was huge, and we weren't expecting that, but we gave people a dedicated press officer. Members of my team were staying in the houses with people, and it was a difficult time in the first few days and weeks afterwards. But Ofcom investigated us, looked at our child protection policy, looked at our rushes, looked how we had dealt with situations around children, and found not only were we not in breach on anything around the way that we had filmed children and how we'd explain things to parents and children, but they also said that we showed best practice. It's something that we do take it. You might all think the television producers are sort of negligent and just looking for the juiciest scenes and trying to get what they want. It's something actually that we have to take incredibly seriously. We've been filming with children for 10 years now, and Benefit Street was a very difficult series to make. It was a very difficult series to look after people afterwards, but we felt, and the people we have filmed felt, that actually we did look after them, and we did take care of them and their children.
Thank you, Kieran. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. Thanks a lot for your time. As luck would have it, I'm from Birmingham as well, and I've been working in the documentary field. And you both are aware, Sheffield Docfest, great documentary festival. You were there early in the summer, and I'm sure you've been before. And I've worked in documentary, and I worked at a company, I will not name their name. My job was literally to read 6 newspapers and find the most vilest stories that could be interesting to make nasty programs like, oh, so the stories are almost headline grabbing, like the documentaries, which makes no sense. Mm. Then I was fortunate enough, I met Asif Kapadia, he made Senna, and he took me on to work on the Amy Winehouse film. And I watched, I had to sort through every newspaper article of her life, and I watched the press slowly kill that woman. And it was depressing to work on. Like, you see her from the start of her career, beautiful woman, she was a rose. Then she slowly turned into this monster that everyone was kicking. So you almost find a subject, kick it. When it's down, you make the story that it's down. When it's dead, you're like, oh, it's gone now. So I want to know, where did the idea from Benefit Street come from? What newspaper did you guys pick up and say, oh, here's a fact that we'll run on and we'll build this whole world around this? Because at the end of the day, documentary storytelling.
Okay. It didn't really come from a newspaper story. Of course, we were aware that, you know, benefits and welfare was a subject that a lot of people had an opinion about and a lot of people were talking about. What we decided to do then, you know, simply was we wanted to tell that story through the lives of a community. The reason we ended up on James Turner Street. James Turner Street's in Winston Green, which is in Ladywood, which you'll know. Mm-hmm. So you'll also know that's an area which, you know, for the last 5 or 6 years has had the highest number of benefit claimants anywhere in the country. So that's kind of why we were attracted to that area. One of the things we also try and do as well is that even though Birmingham's a huge city, it's the second city, it's massively underrepresented on television. So we kind of, you know, yes, you see lots of television shows in London, you see lots in Manchester, you see quite a lot in Liverpool in the north of England. There weren't very many coming out of Birmingham. So actually it felt timely to make that series in Birmingham. So that's how we made it.
Thanks, Kieran. I'm just very aware of the time. I'm just going to take one last question from the lady in the front there in blue.
Okay. My question is going back to sort of what Owen was saying about making TV programmes and the media focusing on the top of society and the establishment. I'm a young person and I know loads of young people who are becoming like really disenfranchised with politics and the media and everyone at the top of society. And so when you say that you're not interested in making productions about that, like, I would say to you, like, you're missing a massive market here. I've just finished my A-levels. Students, you've just finished their A-levels, watch a lot of TV. And, like, I would watch a programme about the establishment and highlighting, like, the rubbish that they're doing. So I'm just, like, I think...
Okay, I'll talk to the development team when I go back.
Well, hey!
I'm going to finish there. There's so much else to do on site. I'm going to finish there. I want to finish by thanking very, very sincerely our three panellists. So if you could give a round of applause to Owen, to Lily and to Kieran. I think one of the things that distinguishes Greenbelt from other festivals is that we do like to take action after we've heard stuff. The Children's Society have a stand in G-Force if you feel moved to do something about what you've heard. And I also think that we have a responsibility as TV viewers as well to be the ones who take action rather than to sit and absorb what's put in front of us. So thank you, Greenbelt. Thank you for coming to this panel. Thank you, Children's Society, for sponsoring it. And I hope you enjoy the rest of the festival. Thank you.
Well done. Thank you.